Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, and welcome to EAN Cast, weekly neurology. My name is Melinda Maggiari, and I am a consultant neurologist at the Danish Multiple Sclerosis in Copenhagen, and the director of the Danish Multiple Sclerosis Registry, and also a professor at the University of Copenhagen. This month's topic is central vein sign and chronic active lesions and their relevance for diagnosis and prognosis in multiple sclerosis. My guest today is Professor Paolo Preziosa. He is currently an assistant professor of neurology at Vita Salute San Raffaele University, a researcher at the Neuroimaging Research Unit, and also a neurology at the Neurology Unit and MS Center of Ospedale San Raffaele in Milan. He has an extensive research activity, which is focused on the application of the MRI in multiple sclerosis and other demyelinating diseases in order to improve the diagnostic criteria, to define better the pathophysiological substrates, to explain the mechanisms leading to progressive accumulation of physical disability and cognitive impairment in such disorders, and to monitor treatment responses and disease development. Welcome, Paolo, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Hello to everyone. Thank you, Melinda, for the kind introduction.
So we hear a lot about these new MRI lesions, central vein sign, chronic active lesions. Let's start with the central vein sign. Could you explain what the central vein sign is and how it's identified using MRI?
Thank you for the question. I think that we are discussing now two relevant topics in the field of multiple sclerosis, because now we know very well that the different lesions that, for instance, we can detect with MRI are not always the same. They might be different. And starting from pathology, we really understood that the pathophysiology of multiple sclerosis is the development of lesions around a central vein. And now, with MRI, we can really detect this finding with a specific sequence based on susceptibility-weighted imaging. The relevance of these lesions that can be detected with MRI is contributing to the different aspects of MS, especially in the diagnostic workup. So I think that this is a very interesting topic that we can discuss together today.
I'm happy to hear that. So can you tell a bit about the pathological basis of this central vein sign in MRI lesions and how the presence of these correlate with the underlying disease mechanisms?
Yeah, the idea is that according to pathology, when you have this damage in the endothelium, so abnormalities in the blood-brain barrier, there may be an increased amount of inflammatory infiltrates that then enter into the central nervous system, promote inflammation, edema, demyelination. And with MRI, with this sequence, so susceptibility-weighted sequence, we can really detect such abnormalities because they promote an hypointensity signal in the center of the lesion that we can detect as a dark line or a small dot, if according to the cut of our sequences. And these reflect the central vein sign, which is the secondary to different pathological processes. So the paramagnetism of the oxyhemoglobin, so there is amount of the oxyhemoglobin, the presence of enlarged and damaged vein, which might promote also a higher increased signal intensity, but also probably the deposition of a fibrillar collagen 1 around the vessel, which is damaged, and so there is a sort of fibrosis. And this highlight increased our sensitivity to detect this central vein.
It sounds that this is something we can use in the diagnosis and differential diagnosis of MS. How can we do that?
This is really interesting because we know very well that MRI is very sensitive to detect lesions. So now we know that there are specific topographies for multiple sclerosis, like periventricular involvement, eustachoidal involvement. But with the application of the central vein sign, it has been interestingly demonstrated that this sign is quite specific for multiple sclerosis. In other words, if we just evaluate T2 hyperintensities, it may be a little bit challenging, at least in some cases, to discriminate between small vessel disease, other inflammatory disorders, and multiple sclerosis. Central vein sign, or better, lesions showing this central vein sign are more frequent and more abundant in patients with multiple sclerosis, already from the earliest phase of the disease, so in patients with the etiologically isolated syndrome, in patients after the clinical onset of the disease, so patients with clinically isolated syndrome. And so the number and the proportion of lesions showing this sign may allow us to discriminate what is MS, so a possible diagnosis of MS, from what is not MS, so contributing to to improve our diagnostic workup, especially in more challenging cases.
This is very interesting because sometimes we have difficulties to differentiate this lesion. So do you have any numbers about the sensitivity and specificity of this central vein sign if we have a good image?
This is extremely important, I think, because with the new McDonald diagnostic criteria, we are improving our sensitivity to really diagnose MS. But from the other side, it's extremely important to improve also the specificity to avoid a misdiagnosis. So the idea to include the central vein sign among the diagnostic criteria is very relevant because it has been demonstrated first using a specific threshold. So the proportion of lesions showing the central vein sign has been proposed among 35% to 50%. And then with the idea to evaluate just a minimum number of lesions showing the central vein sign has contributed to improve the specificity up to 80-90% compared to other diseases like other inflammatory diseases of the central nervous system, but also other diseases which may be common, especially in older patients like small vessel disease, for instance. So the idea is that probably in the near future, in the new criteria, it's likely that the presence of at least a minimum number of lesions with a central vein sign could be useful to discriminate diseases and to improve the diagnosis of MS.
Sounds really good. So now I would ask you again, I think you mentioned CIS and radiological isolated syndrome. So it's a hope that we can also use it as a marker of prediction of conversion of these prodromes to MS.
This is another very interesting and relevant aspect. So we are now considering radiologically isolated syndrome patients as something different sometimes from MS patients just because they were asymptomatic. But the demonstration that they share the same pathological processes, so central vein sign, and maybe then we discuss also about chronic active lesions, this really demonstrates that these patients have already the biological disease, have already MS. So they can be considered, if these lesions are present, really MS patients. Unfortunately, at the moment, we don't have data regarding the prognostic value of the central vein sign to predict conversion to MS in this population. But it's likely that probably future study will be implemented to answer this relevant question.
Sounds good. We may have it as a clinical tool in the future. And now again, back to I'm interested how we can use it in the clinic. So can it predict something about disability progression and brain damage in patients who already have MS?
This is very relevant. There are some studies who suggested that the presence of a lesion with the central vein, especially if combined with the presence of other biomarkers, could really demonstrate, could be predictor of subsequent conversion to clinically definite MS and the accumulation of structural damage and clinical disability. In my mind at the moment, but this is just a personal opinion, I think that probably central vein sign could be particularly relevant in the diagnostic workup. So to really discriminate what is MS from what is not MS. And this is really important because we have treatment, we have the possibility to change the prognosis of our patients, but clearly it's important to confirm that they have MS. And so the central vein sign at the moment could be really diagnostic criteria potentially, more than prognostic one, probably.
I totally agree. And now we know that there is still about 10, 11% who are misdiagnosed in some studies. So that could be good to differentiate. And now some of the, as I'm thinking about implementing and integrating about in the clinical work, because I have difficulties to ask my radiologist to make a sequence to see the. So how should we integrate it in the clinical practice in routine everyday diagnosing and management?
Clearly, this is a fundamental. So, I mean, we can also try to implement the best diagnostic criteria, but if this cannot be applied in the clinical scenario, it's unuseful. But I'm really trying to convince you that it's really possible to implement this criteria in the clinical setting. Some of these sequences are already acquired in the clinical scenario, so they are associatively weighted imaging. So they are typically acquired, for instance, for other neurological disorders, just to exclude hemorrhages, amyloid angiopathy, and some. So the sequences are very similar, and they are already available in the majority of the MRI scanners. So it's just a matter to discuss with the radiologists and neuroradiologists regarding the idea, the relevance to include this additional sequence in the MRI protocol for the diagnostic workup of MS. A suggestion that I can provide you is that another point is that typically these sequences have been evaluated at the beginning using ultrafield I-field scanner or I-field scanner, so 70 or 3 Tesla scanner, but I can assure you that they can be detected also using 1.5 Tesla scanner, so something that can be acquired in the clinical scenario. A possible suggestion to improve our sensitivity to detect these lesions is to acquire the associativity weighted sequence short after the administration of gadolinium agent. Because in this way, if you have the administration of a gadolinium agent with the paramagnetic effect of this contrast, you can enhance the central vein sign. So instead of waiting for 5 minutes between the administration of gadolinium and the acquisition of the post-contrast sequence, you can gain these 5 minutes to acquire the sequence that can allow us to detect this central vein sign. So something that is clinically feasible.
Thank you so much. I already have arguments to convince our radiologist.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the other topic that we hear more and more about. These chronic active lesions, pearls and cells, so the paramagnetic rim lesions and slowly expanding lesions. Can you describe these to we understand better these chronic active lesions?
This is another relevant topic about MRI. I think that everything derives from pathology. So pathological studies arrived several years before MRI, clearly showing that there is a substantial proportion of chronic lesions that show acute ongoing inflammation and demyelination, especially at the periphery, at the rim of these lesions. These rims are characterized by activated microglia containing a huge amount of iron and myelin debris. There is ongoing demyelination and axonal loss. And luckily, with the presence of these iron within microglia, then we can detect these, discriminate these lesions with MRI. So with the same sequence that can be applied to identify chronic central vein sign lesions, we can identify this lesion showing an hypointense rim, and that these lesions are quite prevalent in MS patients that can be detected in all the clinical phenotypes, and probably we will discuss later about their clinical relevance. On the other hand, there is this other possibility, so the term slowly expanding lesions, again derives this concept from a pathological perspective. So the idea that since you have an ongoing demyelination, inflammation at the rim, these lesions tend to enlarge over time. And so if we acquire serial MRI with the sequences that are commonly acquired in the clinical setting, so T1-weighted and T2-weighted sequences, so all our patients have these sequences, we can really demonstrate and discriminate this lesion showing a progressive linear enlargement over time. and so a slowly expansion. And so they can define slowly expanding lesions. So unfortunately, the overlap between these two lesions are not perfect. There is just a partial overlap, but all of these two biomarkers can be easily evaluated in the clinical scenario, in my mind.
It sounds very promising when you said the word biomarkers, but now I'm getting back to clinical practice. So what are the clinical relevance in predicting patient outcomes? How good do they measure disease progression?
I mean, these two biomarkers, which can be identified together to discriminate the so-called chronic active lesions, because the broader term is probably chronic active lesions, because this reflects what we can see in pathology, and consider that up to 57% of lesions in pathology can be defined as chronic active. This means that this is a sort of tip of the iceberg of a more chronic inflammation and the so-called smoldering disease that now we typically consider MS. So it's not just a matter of focal lesion and relapses, but something more complicated and more chronic. And probably the identification of these lesions with MRI can re-identify patients with a more severe disease course, probably because they are characterized by a higher amount, a more severe amount of chronic inflammation. And so all of these studies that have been performed in the last few years using either paramagnetic rim lesions, so the lesion showing an hypointense rim associativity weighted sequence, or slowly expanding lesions, consistently demonstrated that there is a relevant, a significant correlation with the disease severity, structural vein damage, but also they might predict disease evolution over a medium to long-term follow-up. So they are probably a really promising biomarker of this smoldering condition.
How about treatment? Can we use them as a novel therapeutic target? So if you can see that they are increasing, is there any hope that we can intervene to slow it down?
Yeah. So this is another very relevant question, because now we are clearly demonstrating that there is a paradigm shift. So treatment algorithm is changing. We are not focusing just to prevent clinical relapses, to prevent new lesion formation, but you should work on promoting neuroprotection and avoiding neurodegeneration. So the idea that this chronic lesion could be a marker of this chronic inflammation and smoldering disease, it's quite evident now. And so the idea to use this biomarker to predict treatment effects is really compelling and really interesting. Unfortunately, I have to say, at the moment, they are not very interesting and promising results. In particular, for paramagnetic rim lesions, there were just a few studies showing that the number of lesions with this hypointense rim is not substantially influenced after treatment start. And there were studies on using anti-CD20, using BTK inhibitors, and also using, for instance, dimethyl fumarate. But the point, I think, that we should not should be considered negative findings. The idea is that probably we should work from a different perspective. So we should try to avoid PRLs, so paramagnetic lesion formation, because probably as they have developed, we cannot really work, we cannot control their evolution. There are studies now suggesting that these lesions seems to persist for up to 7 years. So what we should do is really to demonstrate that a specific treatment should prevent the formation of these lesions. And this is again in line with the concept to start high efficacy therapies as soon as possible. Because if you really prevent this onset of chronic inflammation, not only lesion formation, but also chronic inflammation, we can really prevent probably this chronic inflammatory component, which is one of the most relevant substrate of disability progression. There are some findings on also on slowly expanding lesions. Some studies suggested that treatment seems not to influence too much slowly expand lesion formation, but anyway, they seem to limit the accumulation of microstructural damage within these lesions. So anyway, probably the number of lesions is not influenced, but this treatment might promote some neuroprotective effects in terms of prevention of a more severe structural damage accumulation. But clearly, we need further studies to demonstrate that.
Thank you. As I hear you, you've been many years in neurology, where we use disease outcome and treatment outcome, relapses, ADSS, new T2 lesion in best case brain atrophy. So I hear you that you say that prognosis and treatment response, we should include these chronic active lesions, even though there is very limited data.
Absolutely true, because anyway, especially now, also for possible new treatment, new randomized control trials, which are characterized by a quite short duration, so 2 or 3 years, we really should try to identify new biomarkers which may be more specific to the underlying pathology, which is the current target of our treatment. So we have very strong anti-inflammatory effects. We are very good in preventing clinical relapses. But what is still missing is the ability to prevent neurodegeneration and to limit such a chronic inflammation. These biomarkers could be relevant because they can be surrogate markers of these relevant pathological processes, and they may increase our sensitivity to detect the treatment effect in a quite a short time frame. So they could be really promising and relevant.
Now I have lastly another question, because beside MRI, I seen some studies using the PET scan, the PET scanning. Is this a method that can be used to identify this chronic active lesion, or what do you think about it as a neuroimaging specialist?
Yeah, I think that the application of specific radioligands using a positron emission tomography may allow us to increase at the most our specificity for a pathological process, because we can use the radioligands specific for TSPO, which is a biomarker, which is a marker of activated microglia. And so we can really detect those lesions showing chronic activity, so activated microglia. And it's really impressive to see that, for instance, a recent study showed that up to 59% of these chronic lesions can be defined as active according to PET. And if you remember what I told you previously, that 57% of lesions were identified as chronic active in pathology, this means that the overlap is really impressive. So I think that PET also with the second and third generation radioligands can do a lot to understand the pathophysiology. There were some pivotal studies, some pilot studies who demonstrated that, for instance, fingolimod and natalizumab reduced the amount of radioligand that can be detected in some lesions after 6 to 1 year of treatment. But these studies were made just including just 10 or 20 patients. And anyway, due to the presence of these radiations, PET cannot be used in the clinical scenario, but it can provide really a lot of information regarding the pathophysiology. So another perspective which can be combined with MRI to understand this chronic inflammation.
Thank you so much. So we keep PET in the research for now. And just I try to wrap up as a not neuroimaging expert that the central vein sign is important for diagnosis in differential diagnosis, and we should try to implement it in the diagnostic workups. And the chronic active lesions are important to understand and also to monitor disease, and we hope that there would be some treatment target. So do you have anything to add to this wrap-up, Paolo?
I think your brilliant summarized the key aspects. I just want to mention to all the people that may be skeptical about the application of this biomarker in the clinical setting that it's not so complicated to evaluate them. And especially for the diagnostic workup and the central vein sign, this lesion assessment, this feature can be used in combination with the conventional criteria. So, for instance, it could be not necessary to evaluate this criterion to all the patients, but it could be extremely relevant for those challenging cases. For instance, when we have doubt about small vessel disease, migraine or multiple sclerosis, neuromyelitis optica or MS. And so we have an additional tool, an additional criteria, which is very specific for MS, which can further improve our accuracy in the diagnostic criteria. For PRL and chronic active lesions, we have another feature which might be helpful to better understand the pathophysiology, but also, since this biomarker can be present from the earliest phase of the disease, this may allow to identify another marker, another negative prognostic marker for our patients. So we can improve our treatment algorithm, also probably taking into account this lesion in the near future. So also to provide the best treatment for each of our patients.
Thank you so much, and thank you for contributing.
Thank you.
This has been EANcast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.